Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. You're listening at CindySheehanSoapbox.com or CPRMetro.org. My guest today is Peter Phillips, and Peter co-authored a paper called The Financial Core of the Transnational Capital Class. So stay tuned, and I'll be right back with Peter Phillips. Peter Phillips is a professor of sociology at Sonoma State University and former director of Project Censored. He teaches classes in media censorship, investigative sociology, sociology of power, political sociology, and sociology of media. He has published 11 editions of Censored, Media Democracy in Action from Seven Stories Press. Also from Seven Stories Press is Impeach the President, The Case Against Bush and Cheney, 2006, and The Project Censored Guide to Independent Media and Activism in 2003.
Peter Phillips, welcome to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox.
Thank you very much, Cindy, for having me on.
Well, it's great to talk to you this way and to finally have you on the show to talk about, I invite you to talk about your new study that you just published called Exposing the Financial Core of the Transnational Capitalist Class. I can't read this morning.
Corporate class. I mean, it's kind of the same thing.
Well, why did you undertake this study? And I want to mention also that you did the study with Brady Osborne, who's a student of yours and a senior, like you were telling me, at Sonoma State. And why did you undertake this, and what are the implications?
Well, I have a long history of looking at power elites and the political process. So my training is in political sociology. My dissertation was on the Bohemian Club, San Francisco Bohemian Club, private men's clubs. I studied quite a bit about the power elite, and have followed it closely into what is now seen as globalization of the power elite, the transnational corporate class, and how they are conscious of themselves, and how they are, they have these giant corporations operate everywhere in the world, and so they're no longer bound to national state concepts, and they really are pushing for control in terms of a global network.
Well, we both of us were at the Bohemian Grove gathering last year, and it was interesting to me all the, you know, I hate using this word, but all the kooks that come out to protest the Bohemian Grove. And one man kept on trying to get me to denounce their practice of sacrificing babies at the Bohemian Grove. And I was like, but I don't think you understand, the bigger picture of this. They're not sacrificing babies up there, but the policies of this group, of the global elite, are responsible for the deaths of babies all over the world, whether it's through war or through economic oppression. And you point out that when they get together in like the G8 and the G20 and the IMF and the World Bank, that that's exactly what they're doing. They're getting together to plot these things to enhance their wealth and their power and to actually hurt the rest of us.
Yes, Cindy, that's absolutely correct. I mean, whenever we go to demonstrations, there are invariably what I would call agents provocateur that may or may not be involved with national security state in some way, but oftentimes we think they are, and they're pushing the most absurd, kinds of concepts, that the Bohemians are roasting babies in underground tunnels and that sort of thing. And it's absolutely nonsense. But that they do that in order to magnify and try to taint all of the people that look at these power elite in some way as crazy conspiracy theorists. And we have to acknowledge that conspiracies happen all the time. I mean, the boards of directors of major corporations meet regularly, and they try to maximize their profits. Sometimes they do that illegally. They're bribing government officials and a variety of things are ongoing, manipulating exchange rates, like with the Libor scandal. Of course they plot and conspire together. And they do this in terms of collectively to continue to maximize profit and return on trillions and trillions of dollars of wealth that is so unequally spread in the world that today when we talk about the death of children, you know, 30,000 people a day are dying, mostly children, from malnutrition and very easily curable basic kinds of diseases. And, you know, that's a tragic loss and is perpetuated by the gross inequalities that exist because of the 1% and the upper 1,000th of 1%, the 6,000 or so that are the folks that are at Davos, are at the Bilderberger groups. They're at the G20, they're at the G8. And they're there to maximize return and protect capital. So our study looks at, okay, who are these people that operate at the highest levels, the financial core of the transnational capitalist class? Who are these people? So we identify 161 people that are in the top most centralized corporations in the world, and the money management organizations like BlackRock, which is the largest out of New York. We put those two lists together, the top 10 of each. We came up with 13 corporations. That's 161 people. Those people control $24 trillion worth of capital. And they operate worldwide. So they're investing in African lands and commodity sales, wherever they can get a return. And it's quite massive.
And as you point out, most wars are waged for these people. Can you explain that?
Well, the U.S. NATO military industrial media empire of the world is in service to the transnational corporate class. They're particularly in service to protecting capital so that capital can flow anywhere in the world that it can get a return. So a good case in point is Gaddafi in Libya. He's selling oil, but not only is he selling oil to the West, he's organizing the African countries that sell oil to try to raise the prices and to encourage and require that oil be bought in gold. Well, this was completely unacceptable to the West.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, using our ambassador, Robert Ford, who was the ambassador to Libya straight out of Iraq, engineered a resistance movement starting in Benghazi with foreign fighters, and they gave them weapons, and they said, oh, this is the Libyan people revolting, but in fact it was funded and encouraged from the outside, and there was, of course, resistance to Gaddafi inside of Libya as well, but we really pushed that, and ultimately, you know, got rid of Gaddafi and had him murdered. So that changed the agenda, so it's no longer oil for gold. You can still get oil cheap from Libya and other places in Africa. And that was a political agenda that protected this transnational corporate class, particularly the oil folks.
What about the situation in Syria? Are there any...
Well, it's very much the same. Ambassador Ford... Robert Ford, his next assignment was to go to Syria.
Wow.
So he goes to Syria and engineers, some of the same fighters from Libya are shipped into Syria, and they become the urban resistance movement in the cities where there was resistance against Assad. And then weapons start flowing from Syria, including what we now know was sarin gas, which had been sold by the Russians to Libya, and the Russians are now saying it was the same sarin gas numbers on the shells that they sold to Libya, you know, decades ago. So weapons have gone from Libya to Syria via Turkey, and that's what's fueling the revolt in Syria today.
Right. What do you make of your report shows the power of these transnational global capitalists, and it talks about the power they have in governments and policy about governments. You know, many of them have been president of the World Bank, of IMF, and they're in the Council of Foreign Relations on the Federal Reserve Board. What do you, and so it's apparently these people who are pulling the strings, what do you make of this, you know, kind of like public pissing contest, for want of a better word, between Putin and Obama?
Well, the Russians and the Chinese aren't playing ball with this core capitalist group. I mean, they have been historically independent and separate. Now, there's a great deal of trade, and in fact, Chinese investors are now able to, just in the last few years, invest inside these management, these money management firms like BlackRock. So they're all hiring Chinese-speaking consultants to work with them in terms of trying to use the capital that China has to continue and join in this international consolidation of capital. That doesn't diminish the competition between the Soviet Union and China and other parts of the world, so that, like now, almost historically, all the oil in the world was paid for with dollars, which really protected the U.S. dollar.
Mm-hmm.
Today, China and Russia do their exchanges in their own currencies. And we're seeing the same thing happen with the South American countries. Venezuela, Ecuador, Bolivia, Brazil are, in fact, trading their goods and oil for Chinese currency and Russian currency. So the dollar is being undermined as the global currency, and that has concerned the U.S. for a very long time, because if the dollar weakens, that, of course, creates inflation for us here at home. And one of the first countries to switch selling oil in dollars to euros was Iraq. Saddam Hussein did that 8-9 years ago.
Right.
And, you know, so the first thing we did after we invaded that country was to switch Iraq oil sales back to dollars.
So you point out that NATO is essentially the global police force for these transnational elites. And what, with this power struggle between Russia and China and the U.S., which is really a struggle for the global elites, what purpose would serve them by the U.S. empire diminishing in power militarily?
Well, right now, 85% of the war production in the world is by NATO countries.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the leading edge of power. More naval ships, more weapons of mass destruction capabilities. And the U.S., of course, spends more than the rest of the world combined. So we are protecting capital class, our transnational, we're protecting our capital class because we're the biggest part of the transnational corporate class in countries everywhere in the world. So the American military empire is killing people today in over 100 countries.
Mm-hmm.
We have special ops forces killing, you know, anybody that's a resistor, and they're labeled as terrorists. And we have this permanent, war, which is very profitable to capital power. So not only is war profitable, but then rebuilding after you destroy nations is profitable as well.
Oh, perfect, so, yeah.
You know, so there's this perpetual state of warfare and the spending for war and the use of military equipment and then the replacement of that military equipment and the literal destruction of whole societies and the breaking up and the creation of what the CIA kind of sees as chaos theory. Or you create chaos in a nation, there's got different ethnic groups splintered off against each other, and there's no central power structure, so you dominate.
Well, that's like the it's like this warfare abroad, but then it seems like that is very similar to the financial bubbles they create here, which is economic warfare, where the power elite profit on the expansion and don't lose anything and end up also profiting when it bursts.
Well, they make money on the way up and they make money on the way down. And so that kind of manipulation of the stock market, of commodity prices, I mean, we've seen the price of food double in the last 5 years. And
right.
That means that more people in the world starve.
Right.
And, but that's protecting the commodity markets from, you know, they keep pushing that bubble, that increase, and then they'll switch over to something else. So that stimulates massive buying of millions of acres of land in South America and Africa. So you can do these huge mega farms growing soybeans or whatever, and displacing indigenous people from their own agricultural capabilities.
And also expanding the influence of such evil corporations as Monsanto over the global food supply.
Correct.
And Monsanto is a huge profiteer.
Yes, they're very much part of this network. But our study is about the financial
core. Right.
These are the transnational corporations. In particular, we're looking at the most concentrated money management firms like BlackRock, Capital Group, FMR, Fidelity Worldwide, AXA. These are not common household names. State Street
right.
Corporations, J.P. Morgan, most people know that. But J.P. Morgan manages over $1 trillion of investment capital. And each of these companies, BlackRock, like $3-4 trillion. These are all trillion-dollar investment management companies, combined with some of the biggest banks in the world, like Barclays. So this is the financial core, the money people of the world's transnational capitalist class.
Well, you say most of them aren't household names, and I read over the list, and I recognize most of the.
Most of them aren't. Like people, if you say, well, who's Allianz SE? Well,
mm-hmm.
That's a German firm, and they're the owners of PIMCO, Pacific Investment Company, which is based in L.A., which is another trillion-dollar management company. So you put all those people together, and there's only 161 of them controlling this $24 trillion worth of money.
Well, I wanted to ask you about the number one, because I did recognize all the other names except for the first one, BlackRock. I've never, ever heard of them. Can you talk about them a little bit?
BlackRock is based in New York. The manager is a guy named Larry Fink from L.A. Their board of directors is like a list of who's who in the international circuits of power. Hang on, let me get to that list of people. And BlackRock, asset management of $3.3 trillion. Lawrence Fink is the chair, and he's on the New York Stock Exchange. He's on the first Boston Corporation. He's a graduate from UCLA. And then it just goes right down the list of these really top-level people, including people from Goldman, primarily with Goldman Sachs out of Taiwan.
Uh-huh.
But the newest board member is a woman named Jessica Inhorn. She's a PhD dean of the School of Advanced International Studies at Johns Hopkins University. But she's also on the board of Time Warner, Clark and Weinstock, she's on the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, the U.S. Treasury, the United States Department of International Development Cooperation, Pitney Bowles. She's on the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations. She's a trustee for the Rockefeller Brothers Fund. I mean, it goes on and on. And, you know, she's just one of the newest members of their board. There's other people there. So they're in the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderberger Group. They go to Davos. They go to the World Economic Forum. And they are the people who participate in planning and setting policies that the G20 and the G8 implement.
Wow. Well, we have a few minutes left, Dan. I want you to talk about the new Project Censored book that just came out. But at the end of the short form that you sent out, you and Brady say that identifying the people with such power and influence is an important part of the democratic movement seeking to protect our commons so that all humans might share and prosper. So we know who these people are, but now what can we do about it, Peter?
Well, part of knowing who's in charge gives you the opportunity to use what democratic means and what research and information means we have to sort of pull the covers back and say, hey, what you're doing isn't good for the world. And if we can identify the people, not just put this in a theoretical construct, you know, inside the social sciences, but really start to look at who's in charge and who the powerful ones are, then we can appeal to their values, their personal values of what's good for human beings instead of what's just good for capital and protecting capital. And those, we have to watch that and really identify the power structures that exist. And it goes everywhere in the world. So.
And you also point out that these people are very aware that they are in a tiny, tiny minority. You say it's like the plantation owners that knew that they were, harshly subjugating human beings, and you say that these transnational corporate class, they're very aware of that also.
They know that they're a tiny minority controlling vast resources, the world's wealth, and they keep appropriating that privately. I mean, when we think about oil or gold or silver that's in the earth, and then the idea that a small group of people can go and uncover that and acquire the wealth from it without sharing that with all human beings in some way, I would think a major moral issue in terms of history and religion and global awareness. I mean, it's just wrong. And we have a website called The Fair Share of the Common Heritage, which is tied directly into Project Censored. And it explains in detail why all living beings have a natural right to a fair share of the common heritage of the world. And that's the water, the mineral wealth, everything. And to say that a small group of people can privatize this and control it, it is the essence of evil. I mean, it really is, if we look at it that way. It's just absolutely immoral. And that is what the nature of capitalism does today. Because it's global. This isn't just, Rudolph and Mary Schmidt's, a little market on the corner. Are they capitalists? Yeah. Well, they are, but not at the moral level of global control and domination.
Well, that's why they need their NATO. That's why they need their police forces.
That's why they spend so much on NATO and the military.
And also the police forces.
Their security, not ours.
You know, Peter, I've been protesting at NATO, and I've been protesting at the G20, and I see just the city police forces come from all over the country to protect the elite.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when we were marching at the Bohemian Grove, you saw the dark-suited guys with their earphones in behind behind the highway patrol, behind the local police.
Exactly.
Of course. And you know, as we have built a police state in the U.S., Homeland Security is about protecting the capitalist elite from the rest of us. It's the 99 versus 1%, which is why Occupy to them was seen as a very dangerous movement.
Absolutely.
And it did give us that consciousness.
Well, so, one thing that is also the public commons is the airwaves, and these people also own the means of propaganda.
Absolutely. That, I mean, that's what Project Censor is all about.
And tell us about your new book.
Well, the new book is out from Mickey Huff and Andy Lee Roth. They're the directors of Project Censored now. And Censored 2014 is out and available with a foreword by Sarah Van Gilder from Yes Magazine, cartoons by Khalil Bendib. And mm-hmm. it's a 400-page scholarly work with over 50 university professors, 200 students, 20 different campuses involved. We coordinate this research worldwide. So we've got, you know, universities all over the world, South America and Europe and here in Canada, that are helping create this compiling of the most important news stories the corporate media didn't cover, but also a really strong analysis of how the corporate media is nothing but a propaganda machine for the power elite.
And what were some of the biggest stories that the corporate media didn't cover in 13?
Well, officially, the list doesn't come out till next week. But you know, we can take we can certainly look at some of this.
Uh-huh.
One of the stories is the richest global 1% hide trillions in tax havens.
Uh-huh.
The failure of the corporate media to really give us a full understanding of the Manning case, of Chelsea Manning, and what was going uh-huh. on there. I mean, they covered it, but they didn't give us a full understanding. Hate
right.
groups arising in the United States. billionaires' wealth intensifies, poverty increases. So a lot of these are very similar things. In Iceland, they vote to include the commons in their constitution. The Iceland is really making some cutting-edge changes of resistance to global capital. Bank interest rates inflate global prices by 35 to 40%. Everything you buy is inflated in its cost by interest rates that actually end up with banks. So these are some of the stories of you know, the Censored 2014 book, which is now hitting bookstores officially everywhere in the country, and our October 1st is our official release date. So you'll see these top stories start to come out as we do, as the press releases are now out, and newspapers like the San Francisco Bay Guardian front page it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Peter Phillips, what is the best way people can find more information about this study, The Financial Core of the Transnational Capitalist Class? And, of course, I'll post it in my newsletter.
It's in the Censored 2014 book.
Right.
So getting that book is a great way to sit down and read the study. It's also online at projectcensored.org, which is our massive website. We have a number of subsites in there, news information. But right now, the Transnational Corporate Class Study is on the front page, so it's very easy to find. And people can just click there and download the entire study. That has the databases of all the biographies of all 161 people who are part of the core of the transnational corporate class.
Well, Peter Phillips, thank you so much for being on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox.
Well, Cindy, thanks for having me. It's really great.
That's the Soapbox for today. I hope you check out Peter's work about this transnational globalist class. I'm not sure I agree with him that these people do have hearts or souls to appeal to, but that doesn't mean we ever stop trying, because we have hearts and souls that burn for true change. As always, I'd like to thank my engineer, Don DeBar, my guest, Peter Phillips, for his time and energy. And as always, I'd like to thank you the most for listening and supporting the show. My name is Cindy Sheehan. You've been listening to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. Peace out for now.